Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to The Hotbed, episode 2, the most electrifying sex of my life. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, hello.
Hello, this is Lisa Williams, and opposite me, I have...
Aniki Somerville.
And...
Remy Sade.
Hello, and we have Baby Joe here.
Woo!
Baby Joe in the house. He is reading the Iliad, so he shouldn't hopefully make any noises before. He's very...
I was impressed with his Mandarin earlier on. It's
yeah.
really good, isn't it?
I know. I mean, considering... Yeah, considering he's 6 months... I'd say he's, you know,
baby genius.
Yeah,
well advanced.
Slightly advanced. We don't have Cherry. Where's Cherry?
Cherry's on holiday in Corfu, I think.
Is she in Corfu?
Not going to lie, I stalked her yesterday. She's with her boot eating cheese.
I've actually been, I actually saw that same post. So she's eating fried cheese and in a very lovely hot environment. But she does deserve it because she's been super, super busy.
Yeah.
So I think she's just finally taking a little bit of time out.
I don't think Cherry has had time to even change her tampon, let alone record a podcast in the last 6 months.
She's had the same hairstyle for 6 months.
Do you think if she took her shoes off, her toenails would like reach
be really long.
The other floor in her house? Yeah. Bless her. We love Cherry. Cherry is busy.
We love her, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But we're really excited to have Remy here. Remy.
Thank you all for having me.
Good to see you. So we met Remy at our live show last year. And we actually put her onto stage, which was really cool. We did this thing called the Sex Box, where everyone wrote answers to questions we gave them. And Remy's one, well, most answers were probably like one sentence. Remy's was like a kind of like mini essay. So, and then she made noises in the crowd. So I was like, oh, well, because it's supposed to be anonymous, but if you're happy to come up and talk, come up and talk. So you did.
Yes, I did.
And do you remember what you wrote? And what you said.
I remember I was the person I was at the time, basically long and short of it, I was just like, we've done things, but I think that half of it's based on like porn because like we're millennials. And so he watches that and then he's like, I got a suggestion. But I didn't know if it was all very realistic.
So when I went to edit the episode, I loved Remy's bit. But then I contacted her just to say, hey, is it cool that I use this? And you were like, yeah, it's fine. Except the guy I was talking about, we've split up now. And it was like a tricky time. I don't know if you want to just say a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically it's the man I was talking about was the man who was in my life for the last 4.5 years. And we had a child together and we split up and I hadn't spoken about it on my blog. And when you messaged me, I said, you know, it was totally fine for you to use it. And it was, I mean, we were still living together at the time. So he knew that I'd actually spoken about our sex life on your podcast. But I was releasing a piece announcing that I was single.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind you guys using it, but I did think that it would be a bit confusing to like...
Now she isn't.
See me say in one breath, I've been single for 6 months, and then in the other breath hear me say, by the way, this is what we do in the bedroom, because we weren't doing anything in the bedroom, but in answer to the question, I was like, well, in retrospect, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no, it all worked out for the best. I'm all right now.
Good. And we wanted to talk today about pregnancy sex. And the reason why, first of all, we do obviously talk about sex after kids. Pregnancy is part of that. But someone we know, I guess through the squares, through the gram, Rebecca Schiller, has written a book called The No Guilt Pregnancy Plan. And it's pretty amazing because it's genuinely like one of the first guides I've seen for women, which doesn't patronise women about pregnancy. It actually gives them the proper information. So it'll say something like...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, drinking in pregnancy. Here is the recommendation from the chief medical officer. Here is the study. Here is anecdotally what people say. And now you go off and make your own decision, essentially. And I really like it. It's a real breath of fresh air. There's a lot of information in there. And she contacted us and asked us if our readers / listeners had any thoughts on pregnancy sex. And some of them were included in the book, which is really, really exciting. And my favourite was that someone said that her pregnancy sex was single-handedly the most mind-blowing, exhilarating sex of her life, which is really super cool. Aniki, any thoughts on pregnancy sex?
I suppose I've always been a slightly anxious pregnant person. I wish I could say that I hadn't, you know, I hadn't been, but because I've had miscarriages in the past, I don't know, there's been a few people that say, obviously, that when you have sex when you're pregnant, your orgasms are more intense. And you can have a sort of higher sense of pleasure.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always been really worried about, would it bring on a contraction? You know, would I actually damage the baby in some way? And certainly in the latter stages of pregnancy, well, there were two things. One, I was just too enormous, like literally, you know, and I could barely, it was, I remember it was the middle of summer and I was so hot.
Yeah.
And I mean, even getting up and going to the toilet was a mission. So the idea of actually engaging in that, I think my partner was also quite scared at that stage. So I guess I didn't actually indulge in much pregnancy sex. And even now, I would still shy away from it a bit. And it's a shame because I've heard from lots of people that it's really good. And it probably releases all sorts of feel-good hormones, so it would be good for anxiety too. But personally for me, I just, I'm too worried about things going wrong.
Yeah. So I watched a really funny NHS video. It's on the NHS site when I looked up sex and pregnancy, and obviously, unless you've had a complicated pregnancy, complications such as if you've had a really short labour, sorry, that's Baby Joe in the background, he's got to a really good bit in his book. If you've got twins, I think, and towards the end of labour, you need to be a bit careful. But genuinely, they say it's very good because it's obviously kind of bonding and you've got these great hormones going around. I did have quite funny contractions after sex with my first pregnancy. First pregnancy, I had quite a lot of sex. I felt really, really good towards the end. Second one, so sick. I had hyperemesis, gravidarium, just like the Duchess of Cambridge, one of the many things that we have in common, obviously. And couldn't do much because I didn't think the sort of sick bag look was particularly attractive. It wasn't really a big motivator for jumping into bed. No, not so much. I was doing hotbed though, so I was having to review a few toys and things, and I kept on having to Google like vibrators plus pregnancy equals safe, you know. And got the go-ahead, at least it's all. I think it's even on the NHS website that vibrators are okay as long as they're not really powerful. So that was all okay.
It's funny, isn't it? Because there's a lot around birth and being orgasmic. And I think I think we've got a piece on the website
hotbedcollective.com.
Yeah, about somebody who'd experienced really intense orgasms while giving birth. And that,
I might have read that, you know.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? I thought that, for me, I would be all over that. Like, I mean, totally. I can't think of anything, you know. I mean, it's a strange one if you're in a public environment, but I sort of think, God, anything that would distract you from that. But so I'm probably more likely to try and indulge in that than the sort of lead up to it.
But I do think birth is such a primitive experience that I kind of don't think I'd care if that was what I was into. I'm not into that, but if I was 100%, into it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just, once you're in the throes of labour, I really didn't give a flying monkeys what I looked like, so I don't think I'd care about that.
Yeah.
But it's totally different to me to having sex in pregnancy than to having an orgasm when I'm giving birth.
I mean, I didn't have conventional labour, so I didn't have to take my sex toys to the hospital, but I would have been tempted otherwise.
Did you give birth at home?
No, I had a C-section with both. Yeah, so I don't think an orgasm in surgery.
Well, I don't know. Feel it anyway, can you?
Exactly. That'd be a waste.
You wouldn't feel anything.
So funny, my whole pregnancy sex experience was, initially I was just having sex like regular.
Yeah.
My libido dipped for quite a bit around the 6 week mark, and then it came back, and then it was kind of normal. But I was a overweight pregnant woman, so I had a scheduled induction the day after I actually ended up giving birth. But because of that, I was like, it was militant. I was like, we must have sex 3 times a day and there's no choice about this. And it was hilarious because during the lull of sexual activity, I think my partner at the time was a bit like, well, you know, we were in our, we were 22, so he had a active sexual appetite, and he was a bit like, so when's it gonna happen? By the time I gave birth, he was like, oh, I'm tired. Like, this is extreme. And I don't even think I cared about whether or not it was the best sex ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that to bring on labour then?
Oh, I had read so many things, and like, being Afro-Caribbean, there's loads of old wives' tales of the things you can do, and then you go on the NHS website and half of them are like completely irresponsible, or they're just not the best thing to do. So I did some conventional things and some unconventional things, but our midwife said that the best thing that we could do was have loads of sex. So
something in the semen.
I'm sorry that I missed out on that, because I was like 5 days overdue, and they told me to walk on an irregular, uneven pavement. So basically have one leg on the road and the other leg on the pavement. So we went to a garden centre, Sion Park Garden Centre, and I ended up walking around there. But no one had actually said that sex would have been a good alternative.
Sex
actually
helped
walking on uneven pavements, not that exciting.
Oh, like, how hot bed is this? How hot bed is this? The choice between having sex or going to a garden centre.
We did the walk. I mean, I did uphill walks every morning at 7:45.
Did you eat hot, spicy food?
Oh, I did all of that. Don't try this at home. I drank castor oil. It was not a good idea. I actually made him drink the castor oil too, because I was like, if I'm doing this, you're doing this, all this is fucking disgusting. And the sex helped, and walking helped, but sex in pregnancy, I felt really sexy when I was pregnant. That was really interesting. Pregnancy and post-pregnancy, except for a period around like between 0 to 6 months postnatal, I felt more confident than I have in my body in my whole life, and in my sexuality and my sexual comfortability and all of that stuff. So when I was pregnant, I was like, oh, like, you know, my body looks great, and I've got this bump, and like, you know, I feel like all ethereal and mother earthy. So that was pretty cool.
I totally felt that. I felt like for the first time I wasn't looking down at my stomach thinking, is it fat, is it flat?
Well, I will say that men were more attracted to me when I was pregnant, and that was shocking.
So you had some messages.
It was ridiculous. Ooh. It was ridiculous.
Really?
Like, I basically, you know, when you're in a long-term relationship, you get to a stage where initially everybody wants you because you're finally off the market, and then nobody even notices you anymore.
Yeah.
And you're just like a wallflower. It was like when I first got in the relationship, and every man and any man was like, oh my gosh, what you do? I had men ask me if I wanted to have their next baby when this one was born.
Like,
it was,
let me get on with this one, like, mate.
So savage when I was pregnant. Men could not talk to me for jack. I think I was cave woman-y in the sense that I was like, no, this is the man that I'm with.
Yeah,
I'm focused here. But men were very Shameless.
Obviously, there is a whole category of kind of guy who would fancy or fetishise pregnant women.
Yeah.
So I'd be worried then, if you're attracting somebody just purely at that point, then what happens after you have the baby and they run off with another pregnant woman?
I mean, initially, I'm not a skinny girl, so initially I don't think I didn't look pregnant until I was about 6 months. I just looked fatter than usual. So I just think they were chubby chasers, and then they realised I had a bump and they were like, oh, bonus.
Or maybe it was just that you were just exuding this like feel good thing.
I did look quite glowy. I looked like, but if you saw, it was such a fall from grace after giving birth. I looked like trash
so
for about 6 to 8 months. But
oh God, I always said that actually being pregnant is like, it's the worst preparation for having a baby, because essentially you are the centre of attention. Everyone wants to be around you. Everyone opens doors, they bring you food, they look after you. And they say that you're beautiful and you're glowing.
Yeah.
Then you have the baby. You basically look like you've been in a car accident afterwards. You look awful. Everyone ignores you. They go straight for the baby. They're not interested in you anymore. Nobody asks really much about you. They go straight into the buggy to see what's going on there. I just think it's really strange. It's almost like you get this loads of attention.
Yeah.
And then suddenly nothing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, God, if you had to pinpoint when was the least sexy time, for me, it would have been just after, you know, those couple of months
where
I mean, I had midwife coming over and I was too scared to actually look what was going on down there.
Oh, I didn't look at my vagina for about a year. I mean, it was ridiculous because who does that? I mean, I never really looked at it before either. But I feel like because of how young I was when I had my daughter, my coming of age into my womanhood happened at the same time as me giving birth and learning about birth and pregnancy and your woman parts, and I gave no cares in the world for my vagina until it was inactive, and then I was like, oh my gosh, you're an organ, you're a part of me, and I'm so sorry I just disregarded you as ever being even aware. Like, it was weird,
a non-thing. I had this they told me, because I had a cut, you know.
Yeah, that's why I didn't look at episiotomy. Yeah,
so I had that, and basically the midwife came over and she said, listen, you need to shower. You need to use a shower head and get in the bath every day and give it a really good shower. And I was actually too scared to even put the shower head there because it hurt.
It really hurt.
And it's funny, I think I hadn't been mentally prepared for the fact that essentially it just felt like a wound, you know, and it was a wound. It was a healing wound.
Everything felt bruised.
And I think that's a tricky thing. I mean, there's obviously no rush to then get back into it again afterwards.
So this is, and funnily enough, in our first ever hotbed episode, I was pregnant. It was the day before I had Joe. And I was like, oh, I don't know how soon I'm going to have sex again. Probably for like at least 6 weeks. I mean, try 6 years. Let's try 6 years. Anyway, we are now going to listen to an interview with Rebecca Schiller about her book, The No Guilt Pregnancy Plan. She's a journalist. She writes for The Pool. She is the chief executive of a charity called Birthrights, which basically is dedicated to improving women's experience of pregnancy and childbirth. She's written a book about why human rights and childbirth matter, and it is eye-opening stuff. It's all about birth trauma, about birth choices, about how women are disempowered at every step of the way, how there's very little regard for, say, for example, women, this is a bit heavy now, but women who've been sexually abused can find birth very, very traumatic, particularly if they feel out of control. She has got our back. She is fighting for our rights and doing it in a very clever, interesting way and using whatever scant resources they have very, very well. And she's written a book which isn't heavy. It's really fun. It's got a really nice Instagrammable pink front cover. We'll put the picture on our Instagram feed. It's got stuff from us, the Hotbed Collective, and our readers in it. It's got stuff about breastfeeding, bottle feeding, essentially any choice that you have got as a pregnant woman or a mother. And there's stuff in there for dads as well. She's taking the guilt out of it, and it is a relief. It is really nice to read. She is treating us like people with brains. Oh my God, fancy that. And this is her talk about it. So this is Rebecca Schiller. So Rebecca, from Birthrights to your No Guilt Pregnancy Plan, what is the connection between the two?
I think my work with Birthrights really made it very clear to me that women don't have the kind of preparation for pregnancy, birth and everything that comes after, to help them make that transition from you know, being a woman who doesn't have children to being a woman who does have children, but still trying to retain interests and relationships and work. So the idea was to think of a sort of deeper way to prepare that treated women like adults.
Yes. Wow, revolutionary.
That, you know, you might still have a brain,
yes,
that you might want to use, and that you might have a whole complex series of circumstances and needs, and that also nobody's the same, that there isn't a right way to do things. Mm. And that's something that comes up time and time again with birthrights, that women are told there's a way.
Yes.
And it might be the way that this hospital does it, or the way that their mother-in-law did it.
Oh, yeah.
or the way that, you know, their partner thinks they should do it. But actually, there is only one way, which is the way that it matters to that woman, and the things that her life and her body and what she knows about herself, that expertise brings along with all the clinical best practice. And so the idea is to give women a very clear guide to preparing, but also one that tries to normalise the fact that there's a lot of unexpected stuff, a lot of roller coasters, and that women feel a whole range of things, and that those are all okay as long as they feel okay for that woman.
And why is the sort of the no guilt part of this particularly important to you?
I'm really fed up of hearing women talk about guilt and shame and disappointment and failure and sadness when they're mothers. Some of those things are unavoidable. Some people will have a really difficult pregnancy journey. Some people have devastating things happen to them when they become mothers. But actually, the idea that we should all feel guilty if we breastfeed our kids too long, or if we don't breastfeed them, or if we had a cesarean, or if we put our child in danger by having a home birth, or if we went back to work too soon, or if we didn't go back to work. I've talked to a woman who's made almost every choice across the spectrum, and most of them talk about a kind of scrutiny, like everybody peering over them, waiting for them to make their decision and then telling them why it was wrong. And I don't think we need to feel like that. I think it's a construct, and we're encouraged to feel like that because it makes us less powerful. So the idea is to banish that, and it's a bit of a catch-all word for all of the unnecessary emotions that other people encourage us to feel, and a chance to resist that and say, you really matter, and you get to make these decisions, and you don't have to feel bad about them.
And why do we think, because, you know, if you're empowering people to go through this sort of journey at hospital, let's say, when they're pregnant, and to sort of ask the questions and to know maybe a bit more about what options are out there rather than just being presented with the way, do you think many women are a bit frightened of being the sort of the difficult one, the troublemaker?
Yes. I mean, we're all supposed to be good girls, aren't we? And that's interestingly a phrase that quite often gets said to women in labour, good girl.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I think we aren't encouraged, any of us actually, whether, you know, there's obviously an issue with power and being a woman, but also in a hospital environment, lots of us feel at the bottom of the hierarchy.
Yeah.
But actually, most midwives and doctors will tell you that women have incredibly valuable information that only they know.
Yes.
Of course, the law makes it so that women can be the only decision makers. And if you look at the research, it shows that you can have a traumatic birth on paper. You can have a birth that doesn't go to plan, that ends in an emergency situation, and feel okay about it if you're listened to, treated with kindness, and feel part of the decision making. So that's actually really important for mental health and well-being, that women understand what's happening to them and that they have agency and power to make those decisions. It's important for the law, it's important in our maternity service, but it's just important for women because it can be really damaging to them in the long term if they don't.
So let's talk about sex.
Yeah.
And the reason, well, we're the hotbed, so we have to, first of all. Second of all, you reached out to our Instagram followers when you were writing the book because you wanted our experiences of sex during pregnancy, and you have devoted part of your book to that exact topic. So why did you think that that was important?
I think there's this funny sort of myth that when we become mothers, we sort of put that sexual side of ourselves in a box. And I know from my personal experience, I can't say that as soon as I'd had a baby, the first thing I wanted to do was like jump back into bed. You know, I think there is a process of adjustment. But I also really resist the idea that we can't be really great mothers and also have really adventurous and interesting sex lives. And I know you guys resist that as well.
Exactly.
So it just seemed like I had to put it in the book.
Yeah.
And to find a way also to include lots of women's experiences, that for some women pregnancy was just a complete turn off and the last thing they wanted to do was have sex, and that that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that for some women, actually their pregnancy would be really amazing and they'd love their changing body and they would feel really adventurous and like exploring, and that there should be maybe some tips for how you might do that.
And also it's good to know that however you're feeling is normal.
Yeah.
Whatever end of the scale you are.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to think in advance that your sex life might change. Because I think we're encouraged, a lot of pregnancy preparation is about buying stuff.
Yes. Like
that's what we're encouraged to do.
Yeah, and decorating the nursery.
Yeah, like things. Mm. And we're not really encouraged to think about the things that we actually find ourselves talking about with friends, like maternity leave and the impact on how you're going to feel about your work life and your relationship with your partner.
Hormones are a big one for me.
Oh yeah.
Why do I feel so weird? No, it wasn't really like that. It was more just, why do I suddenly feel like myself again?
Yeah.
It was when they'd gone that I suddenly felt that they had been there, making me feel weird.
And people say hormones, pregnancy hormones, but does anyone ever explain
no.
what they are and what they do? That's one of the things I made, I actually had to look quite a lot of it up myself to understand how the various different hormones work and what levels they are in the body at different times and what happens postnatally, why women feel so strange in those first months. And so I think it's just important to put a little flag in the ground and say your sex life is likely to change in some way, and that's okay, and maybe you want to think about that and prepare for it, so it's not a shock. And I tried to do that also with thinking about the sort of the other parts of your relationship as well, that those might change, tensions might come up, and that if you just think about that and are aware of it, you might be a bit more forgiving with each other, and be able to kind of weather some of those storms and make a little bit of a plan in advance.
And any preparation is better than none from that point of view, presumably, even if it's a very quick chat with your other half.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think lots of us aren't going to sit down and sort of do DIY couples counselling in advance. But I think even to have read yourself, like I wish I had read when I was pregnant with my first baby and thought about what it might feel like the moment my husband went back to work.
Yeah, it's a big moment, isn't it?
And I'm in the house and I'm not earning any money anymore and I have nowhere to go apart from it, and I'm suddenly looking after the baby and he's going to go and he's going to get a lunch break and he's going to pop out for a coffee.
Hot cup of tea.
And I'm going to have to ask him for money if I want to have my hair cut.
Yeah.
And that was such a staggering moment for me, where I suddenly was like, oh my God, what have I got what have I got myself into here? And it was fine, but I really wish I thought for a moment about that in advance and we talked about it, and I think that would have helped me transition more easily to being a mother. As it was, it's just made me a kind of raging feminist.
Well, there's a few of them over at the hotbed, so you're in good company.
Excellent.
So we've talked in previous episodes about the sort of mummy MOT and how important it is to restore pelvic floor, to look out for things like pelvic floor dysfunction, prolapse, etc. From an emotional point of view, what can women do if they feel that they have been affected by birth trauma, birth injury, and it's causing them issues with body confidence or issues in their relationship and their sex life? What would you advise?
I mean, first of all, know that you're not alone, and that sadly this is a pretty normal way to feel after giving birth, and that you can feel better. There's a really brilliant website called Make Birth Better. I think it's makebirthbetter.org.
It's
run by a woman called Emma Svanberg, who's a clinical psychologist. Mm-hmm. And she's collated all of the birth trauma services across the country and put them on a map.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go and look at what is near you. And if you find the map doesn't have services that you know, tell her.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some really great, if you have a traumatic birth and it's causing you longer term problems, if you find yourself thinking about it a lot, it's disturbing your sleep, if it's having an impact on your sense of self, then you can seek professional help, talking therapies, but also innovative things like eye movement desensitization therapy is really good for trauma.
What is that?
It's something that I don't completely understand, but it involves a sort of retraining your brain through the way that you move your eyes from left to right and talking about the traumatic event. And there's some good research to support that it works.
And I thought garlic bread was progressive.
This is like... I think you can eat garlic bread at the same time. I've put a chapter in my book about overcoming a difficult birth, particularly aimed at women who might be having another baby, because that's often when it comes up.
Yes, yes.
You might have just got on with things and then suddenly find you're pregnant and feel it's all flooding back. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important piece of sort of signposting in that is just to support. Having somebody, whether it's a doula or booking in with a caseloading midwifery team, having somebody that you can say, I am really freaked out about this. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm freaked out about this. Please, can you help me? Mm. Is really important. And that might include going through your notes from your last birth.
Yeah.
But if you have something like PTSD, actually sometimes it's not super helpful to reprocess the whole thing. That can be quite triggering. So it's getting the right support in place. And I think that make birth better is a good place to start.
And your no guilt thing, lastly, is extending to all of your life or just... matters of reproduction, pregnancy. Do you feel guilty about other things?
Oh, God. I mean, I'm my own sort of like worst case study. I feel guilty about everything.
Come on, be the brand.
But I think there's a case for like your no guilt wine plan.
Yes, that's the follow up.
Your no guilt cake plan. I think, you know, as women, we are encouraged to feel shitty about lots of things. I find it really interesting how a lot of the sobriety books at the moment are all written by women and are all aimed at women.
Yeah.
So while I think it's really valid that we examine the choices we make and make positive ones, actually we should just cut ourselves and each other some slack.
Did you see what we wrote on... Well, we didn't write this, but I put something on Instagram the other day and I'm going to read it out. I want to see if you agree. Things women shouldn't have to apologise for. Number one, having our periods. Number two, sexual preference. Number three, putting work first. Number four, bra cup sizes. Number five, independence. Number six, painting our faces. I think presumably that's sort of lipstick rather than my lion, the lion thing you might get down
at the fate. But don't feel guilty for painting your face like a lion either.
A lion.
That's fine.
Number seven, how many people we've slept with. Number eight, looking like hell. Number nine, making more money. And number 10, eating too much.
Yeah, we shouldn't feel guilty for any of those things. Mm. And, you know, I think there's a good test if you feel guilty about something. It's like, would a man feel guilty about this or be encouraged to feel guilty about this? And the answer is almost always no.
Agreed. Rebecca's laughing because just as she was answering that question, I took a really big exhale and my top has just popped open and it could be that baby Joe is not with me. So there's a few bust issues going on. So normally I'm breastfeeding Joe throughout the first series and today he's now 6 months nearly, so he's with my mum and I'm feeling a little bit busty McGee.
Well, don't feel guilty about your bust.
My brand. So on brand, there I am. I'm living the brand.
Busting out.
And follow Rebecca on Instagram. She's just at Rebecca Schiller or Rebecca.Schiller.
Rebecca.Schiller.
Right. And have a look at hashtag no guilt pregnancy plan. It's really lovely talking to you. And we'll probably have you back on the show for your next book.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thank you. That was Rebecca Schiller, and that was me with a cameo appearance from my boobs that bust out of my top. At the time, I am breastfeeding, but I'd left my baby with my mum, as I said, and Babs Windsor carry-on style, ping, went the top. She then later told me that was the highlight of her day, which was really nice of her. So that was Rebecca, and I just wanted to ask you two before we go, like, about what you don't feel guilty about. So she's got her no guilt pregnancy plan. We talk about women not feeling guilty about wearing makeup, about earning more money. Aniki, is there anything you defiantly like don't feel guilty about?
I don't feel guilty if I can afford it, paying for someone to look after my daughter.
Yep.
And I don't beat myself up about that anymore because I sort of think
I've got to have some time to try and hustle and yeah. earn a living and do the things I want. And I actually think it makes me a better parent
yeah,
and sort
yeah.
of less grumpy and resentful. I think I'd be really grumpy and resentful if I was a full-time mum at home.
Huge, massive shout out.
And
to
I really respect people that do it.
Oh my God,
I'm
so
not,
do
I. You know, I feel it's I think difficult. It's amazing, but I need a little bit of time each week
yeah.
just to go and do my stuff.
Yeah.
And that keeps me sane. So I don't feel guilty about that.
Remy.
I don't feel guilty about being a MILF because I looked like trash before I had my kid and then just afterwards. Mm. And
I'm going not because I agree with you. Just listening.
No, I basically had a severe bout of postnatal depression, which I was like in denial about.
Yeah.
And included in my postnatal depression was just not caring for myself aesthetically.
Yeah.
Which is something I never really cared about. But then I started to care about, especially when I became single. And being sexy, there was nothing wrong with that. And it's weird. I feel like because of this movement at the moment with women embracing their bodies, no matter what that looks like. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's fine not to shave your legs or mm-hmm. not to do your hair or to not want to leave your house and to like feel empowered in that. And I do feel empowered in that, but I also feel empowered in feeling sexy.
Yeah.
And I believe in the concept of being a MILF. It's very important to me. Not necessarily in the porn term, because I'm not trying to do that. But
well, it's most... to me, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking you're too young to be a MILF.
But I'm not.
But I don't know. For me, I've always thought it was like, what? Is there a particular age category that you have to be or not?
No. I think 40 and over is like the usual idea.
Well, it's a better than a cougar, isn't it? A cougar MILF.
Well, by far, it depends. So. It depends if we're looking at porn standards, isn't it? Because I think a porn actress, isn't there that joke that's like, you're either preteen and you're employable as a kind of someone that looks young, and then suddenly when you're kind of at your maybe classically physical peak, you're not interesting to porn viewers, and then you get more interesting when you enter the MILF category at like probably like 28, 30. I mean, that's the porn industry for
you. It's crazy because whenever I say to people, you know, yeah, like I'm such a MILF, I never refer to it in terms of porn. I've actually never watched MILF porn anyway, but for me, it's like, yes, I've got a kid, but I can be sexy I can be attractive. And that's so important to me to feel that way, because it's something that I never did before and I never cared about it. But now it's like, well, no, like, yes, I'm fat and I'm fly and I'm a MILF. And you're just going to have to deal with it, because finally I have. And it took me so long to.
And we're talking about body confidence in another episode. But isn't it such a relief to like embrace that and not make yourself feel guilty about
Absolutely.
Your weight and your body? And I mean, weight is a bullshit term anyway, isn't it, really?
Absolutely.
And you've got, just tell us quickly. So Remy is on Instagram, Books Baby and Back. Is that right? Have
Books,
I got it in the right
baby
order?
Baby and Back. Yeah,
and she's got a hashtag. Fat Girl Magic.
Fat Girl Magic is like my favourite hashtag. It's like I've got Fat Girl Magic with my Black Girl Magic, and it just kind of works all in one thing. But yeah, no, it's important to me. I started to take pictures of me in high street clothing because I was a student when I got pregnant, so I didn't have loads of money. But I just felt like overweight mums weren't openly allowed to embrace their sexy unless they were like loaded, like Tess Holliday. She's like beautiful, big and loaded.
Yeah.
And so I just borrowed this hashtag from my friend who actually doesn't have a kid, and I started taking pictures of myself in high street clothing, and I got inundated with messages. And every time I upload a picture of me looking somewhat put together and referencing my weight, I always get loads of messages from other plus size mums asking me where I've bought my clothes or how I just felt confident enough to be able to do this, because like now I wear like mini skirts and see-through tops. Not all the time, but most.
And you look great. You look banging.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I love, someone said to me the other day, like, don't follow body posy like accounts just for the body positivity. Follow them for the style. Like, everyone just looks so great. Yeah. And it's so nice to see what clothes look like on different bodies.
And
know?
I would never call myself a body posy babe or a self-love warrior. I love them. I think what they do is amazing. But trust me, 2 days before my period, I am as insecure as any other woman. And equally, I'm not an advocate of simply being a fat woman and being proud of that. I'm an advocate of being a woman and being proud of that. So my younger sister is like a size 8, and if she felt like she was insecure in that, I would be as devastated as if I met a woman who was a size 18 or a size 28 and felt insecure in that. So the size of the woman to me is irrelevant. It's more about the feeling. And so that's why I say for me, MILF is a mindset. It's a feeling of feeling attractive and secure and confident in what you look like and whatever that means to you. So body posy babes, I think that they have a really important movement in the sense that they're saying, you know, just accept yourself. But I'm not like that all the time.
Why? So what else will people find if they follow you on Instagram? And what's your blog?
So my blog is booksbabyandback.com. And on my... So I'm a writer by trade. That is what I do. That is where all of this started. But now I'm a writer who also has a couple of podcasts. I'm working on the Make Motherhood Diverse podcast, which is just sharing women's stories. It's almost like Humans of New York for mums. And also because meeting older women has taught me that no matter what age you have a child, it's as hard and as fulfilling as it is when you're really young or when you're really old. And I kind of feel like I'm not bridging the gap because that makes me sound like I think I'm so great, but like I feel like I'm exposing to my peers what it's like to have a kid at this age, and also exposing to women who are older than me that we're not all dumb when we have a kid really young either. Because I remember, you know, pregnancy, everyone looked at me like I was like a victim of some kind of childhood trauma because I looked like I was 18. I was 20, but I looked like I was 18 and having a baby. And it was like, oh, bless you.
Right, that's a goodbye from Joe. Goodbye from me. Thank you, Aniki. Thank you, Remy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.